Hello and welcome to Crackpot Theories and another episode where everything is plausible until proven otherwise. I'm Circa.
And I'm Sinead.
And today we're going to talk about the cult classic Jaws.
Yes, the film Jaws, the film that made people afraid to go into the water even though they really didn't have that much to be worried about.
Dun-dun. The greatest score ever made on a film.
It's all right.
So, what is the theory that we are putting forth to our lovely listeners today?
Well, the theory that I have about the film Jaws, after watching it a number of times and knowing quite a bit about sharks, you know, first of all, how much do you know about sharks?
I don't know all too much. I know a shocking amount of shark reproduction organs, purely because I read way too much fan fiction of Breath of the Wild, but that's calling myself out. But other than that, I don't know too much.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah, I would say that I know more than the layperson and less than a marine biologist. But I think they're fascinating creatures, so I take an active interest in this and all the shark movies that I can actually watch. Mm-hmm. Jaws is not one of my favourites. It's a very good, very well-made film, but I was always very much on the side of the shark.
Mm.
But as it turns out, that may have been the intention, because the author, Peter Benchley, he did not make out any of the human characters to be likable people. No. He didn't want you to root for them. And the shark was always meant to be like a force of nature, mm-hmm. rather than this kind of rampaging animal with menace on the mind. So my theory is that the shark in Jaws is not a real shark.
It's not a real shark?
Well, in canon, it is not a real shark. They were never looking for a real shark. It was always a fake shark.
Okay. So, explains me how this shark is a fake? It's a bamboozly fake shark.
Yes, it is very much a bamboozly fake shark. See, if you know anything about sharks, you know a mm-hmm. certain amount of the way that they hunt. And the shark in Jaws is said to be a great white.
Yeah.
Now, great whites attack in two kind of formations. What they usually do is, if they're hunting like a seal, they will come up from underneath it and they will knock it out of the water and then swim up after it. Yeah. They're breach hunters. Mm-hmm. That's why you see them flying out of the water every now and then. It's purely to kind of stun the thing that they're attacking so that it's easier to eat. The other way that they attack is they will kind of circle something for a while and then kind of dare to take a chunk out of it. Mm. So when you see like YouTube videos of people encountering great whites in the wild, you'll see the shark just circling their boat for a while and occasionally just kind of popping their head out of the water just to like, you know, hey guys, what's going on? Kind of thing.
What's all this then?
But they do. They're very cautious. They're quite shy, but they're also very curious. So they want to know what's going on. And if there's something interesting, they'll hazard a little bite out of it just to see what's going on. And then they'll go, no, I shouldn't bite that. And then they'll swim away.
That's why an awful lot of people who have been bitten by sharks actually survive very much, because they are only have curiosity bites, isn't it? They don't actively go, I'm going to bite this person and eat their entire being.
If it's above a certain size, like if it's human sized, they might take one kind of chunk bite, which is why sometimes people who are attacked by sharks, they lose a hand, they might lose a leg, a foot, stuff like that. But generally, they do tend to escape with their lives. It's usually a lot of the fatalities involved tend to involve multiple sharks. But great whites are sole hunters, usually.
As a person that has been bitten by a shark, are you missing any limbs, Sinead?
No, I am not. When I got bitten by a shark, I was 11 years old and it was off the coast of County Wicklow. I was swimming and I actually saw the shark swimming away. Now, at the time, I didn't realize it was a shark. I just thought it was a really big fish. As far as I can tell, it was a black-tip reef shark, which you do get in Irish waters. They're never that big. They grow to be about the size of maybe a Labrador, lengthwise.
Yeah.
I'd say, you know, if you pick them up out of the water, they'd weigh as much as about a beagle. So, yeah, their teeth aren't even that big. And the thing is, the water in the sea that day was so cold, I didn't realize it had bitten me until I got out of the water and I saw that there was blood running down my arm.
But you survived.
Of course I survived. Yeah, now I've got a cool scar.
It didn't come back for the rest of you.
On average, when I think about all the animals that have bitten me over the years, the shark bite was one of the least severe because I didn't feel it. Probably the most severe is when I was bitten by a child.
They're vicious, I've heard.
Well, yeah, I mean, this child was like about a year old and they were still cutting teeth. So their teeth were really sharp and they just grabbed onto like the meaty part of my arm and went like that. And their teeth were super sharp and it really, really hurt. Like just below that is probably a bite from a gerbil. And then like dog bites, cat bites, a cow bite one time, a goat, a sheep. What else? Birds. I've been bitten by birds.
Biting comments.
Yes, biting comments. I've been bitten emotionally.
They're the ones that stick with you. They leave the real scars.
No, but I have this really cool scar that looks a little bit like teeth marks. But I mean, I was never in any actual danger. The most danger I was probably in at that point in time was like possibly drowning. But even then, I was a strong swimmer. It was the Irish Sea. I was never in any real danger. And in fact, more people are killed every year by cows than they are by sharks.
By toilets.
Vending machines.
Vending machines is really easy to get smear-shirt by that, though. Because you get really angry at it when it doesn't give you a cross on. You give it a kick and it kicks back. So that, yeah.
This is true. So sharks, not that dangerous. So the fact that the shark in Jaws killed... First of all, the skinny dipping girl,
mm-hmm.
then the kid,
mm-hmm.
then that guy on the catamaran.
Yes.
And then Quint. So altogether, it ate 4 people. Did it eat any more than that?
I honestly can't remember, but they were the main 4 that were very explicitly said that.
Yeah, I watched it recently and I made note of who got eaten. But, you know, you never know. There could be something that I missed there. But the fact that it's not a real shark. All right, so it does some very unlike great white shark things.
Mm.
Like the first kill in the film is the girl who went skinny dipping. And you'd see that something grabs a hold of her and pulls her around a bit and then kind of yanks her under the water.
Yeah.
That's not what a great white does.
That's what an orca whale does. That's more a killer whale type of thing because they prefer to drown and drown their victims.
Yeah, crocodiles do that to their prey.
A very interesting fact about orca whales is in parts of Canada, they eat mooses.
Yes, I saw that.
That is wild.
It really is. But I mean, as well as that, I mean, an orca is capable of understanding the concept of revenge.
Yes.
Which a shark is incapable of. So that makes these things more likely. You know, that was not a very pleasant way for this girl to die. But, a hammerhead shark maybe might attack like that. A great white, no, because they don't play with their food.
But even it is set off the coast of New York, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
That wouldn't be a place where you'd find a hammerhead shark, even if it was, say, an actual shark that was doing it. You wouldn't find hammerheads in that vicinity.
No, according to the Shark Tracker app, there tends to be certain types of sharks. Now, the biggest shark that you would usually get off the coast of New York is a sand tiger shark.
Mm-hmm.
They have been known to bite and injure people, but it's rare.
They're significantly smaller than a great white as well.
They are, yeah, they don't grow that big. I mean, they're still pretty big. You wouldn't want to kind of face one in a boxing match, although you would have a massive advantage if you did.
You'd significantly win, though, because you can actually deter great whites by bopping them on the nose because they're just like, what did you just bop me?
One of the things that I actually love about sharks is that when they're not actively biting anything, they have this really derpy expression on their face. Just like, hey guys, smiling. What's going on here? So I saw a picture of a guy holding what they said was a baby great white. It wasn't. It was a salmon shark. But they look very, very similar. He was just holding it and it looked like he was just saying, oh, gee whiz, guys.
Oh, gee whiz, look at my tiny teats.
It was so cute. Okay, but I digress. So, you know, this was not a style of attack that a great white would do. And then when it attacked the boy on the Lilo, like it seemed to know what a Lilo was because it came up and tipped him off of it. Mm. Which, again, the average great white would not have ever seen a Lilo in its life.
Because most times when a person is attacked by great whites, when it's recorded, they're usually things like surfers and stuff. So from underneath the water, they would just see the outline that would look vaguely like a seal or
a turtle.
Or a turtle or things like that.
Yeah, they wouldn't really know enough to kind of tip you off something that you were balancing on.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make sense in a fish brain. Now, when we're talking about creatures, I do understand these kind of concepts, like orcas, as you said, crows.
Crows are evil.
Crows are spiteful. Crows can be spiteful. Goats, possibly.
Cats.
Cat? Oh, no.
No, they're smart.
All they really understand is that you're not doing what they want and they are angry about it.
But I know crows in particular do have a very good knowledge of revenge and of personable accountability. Like, if you're kind to a crow repeatedly, like the crows out your back garden, if you give them crumbs or if you leave out food for them, they will actually bring you back presents of like little bottle caps and flowers and stuff. There's actual proper evidence to show that the crow not only recognizes you but befriends you, and they have actual, like, their calls will be specific to you. So they name you something in crow language. So they know your face. They know who you are.
So it's possible that this was actually a murder of crows masquerading as a shark.
Yes.
No, I have a better explanation for it. But when we go to other inconsistencies with the way that the shark attacks, I mean, the whole thing after the boy gets killed and all the holidaymakers are still on the beach and trying to enjoy their fancy New York seaside holiday. They have the Coast Guard working in the water, but the shark avoids them and goes into the unoccupied part of, like, the lagoon and attacks there instead and, you know, has another victim.
But how would they know that the Coast Guard was there?
How would they even know that a Coast Guard, what a Coast Guard is?
Yeah.
Even, like, I mean, there's some species of sharks that live to be about, like, 600 years old. They mostly live in the Arctic and they're all blind. Even they wouldn't really have any concept of what a boat is. It's just like big floaty thing. That's big swimming thing.
Too big to bite.
Yes. Will bite? Maybe. Will not bite? Bit. Oh, no.
And then they swim away.
Lost a tooth. That's the other thing. The shark in the movie never loses any teeth. Now, a great white, in particular, most species of sharks, the ones that aren't baleen sharks or filter feeders, they have conveyor belt teeth. Their teeth pop out like nobody's business because they're designed to kind of come loose so that if they get stuck in something, the shark won't get injured. So there's always a row of teeth behind it to ready to come back up and give them a full set of teeth. And this is why loads of kind of hippies and surfers went around with those shark teeth necklaces. They never had to fight a shark to get a shark tooth necklace because the teeth pop out like popcorn.
That is so disappointing because I always figured that when you see those surfer guys with their cool shark necklaces that they had a proper fisticuff with a shark. And I was like, oh man, they must be so cool. They had a proper round of boxing with a shark to get that tooth. And it's just that, nah.
Yeah, in the water where they're at a disadvantage as well, you know, underwater fist fighting a shark.
They went from badasses to good thrift shore finders. Thrift shops, sorry.
Gift shops, actually.
Gift shops, even.
Gift shops, yeah. But, like, shark teeth is kind of some of the random rubbish that you find along with all of the regular seashells because they're just designed to pop out like that. They never find any teeth belonging to that shark in any of the victims.
Nope, they do not.
And that should have been the first thing that they said because they're like, oh, look at this tooth. This is clearly a great white's tooth. Never said anything like that. Mm-hmm. But that's on Hooper. Mm-hmm. And we will talk about Hooper. Okay. The other thing is, and this is the thing that's really confusing, is that the shark's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Quint has this great big monologue about what happened to him during the sinking of the Indianapolis, that all of his friends and himself went into the water and they got picked off one by one by sharks. And he said this part of this monologue was about the shark's eyes, that they were like emotionless, like a doll's eyes. Then he mentions that as they were biting, the eye rolled and turned white because that is a thing that sharks do.
Yeah.
They do it to protect their eyes. Their eyes roll over when they're taking a bite of something. If you watch YouTube videos of great whites kind of doing, you know, poking at people in cages, you know, hanging around, if they try to bite something, their eye will roll back into their head because they're trying to protect it in case their prey wants to wrestle.
It's like me eating ice cream, just like, oh my God, this is amazing. My eyes roll back in the back of my head.
Okay, but are you trying to protect your eyes from the ice cream in case it, you know, comes to life and starts boxing you?
Maybe. That might be a future crackpot theory. We never know.
So, oh, then that means your ice cream was like secretly that Pokemon who's an ice cream.
Oh, God. Vanilla ice. All right. So,
moving on. So Quint actually mentions this in his monologue. But then when Quint is getting eaten by the shark, its eye never moves.
No, it does not.
And as well as that, its jaw never moves because great whites have the hinged jaws to kind of flap up and down so that they can take kind of bites of things. This shark's jaw stays exactly where it is.
Yeah, it doesn't have the chompy. It doesn't. The big chompers.
No, it doesn't. Like, and the fact that he even attacked the boat in the first place and tried to sink the boat so that it could get to Quint, that is just nonsense. Mm-hmm. But, however, if the shark was equipped with some sort of drill.
The drill?
And could put some holes in the boat in order to make it sink.
I'm just picturing a shark holding like an industrial drill with no hands, just flapping. It's like, ha-ha! Like some form of dastardly villain poking holes in a boat. I'm so sorry.
No, that was okay. I'm just giving you a minute to collect yourself.
That was an image. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you'll have to go home and like paint that. We can put it on future merch or something. Okay, but this is the problem. The shark itself doesn't act like a shark.
No.
Biologically, it doesn't behave like a shark.
No.
And seems to have a certain amount of human-based intelligence. Mm-hmm. So here's what I'm thinking. Now, Amity Island is a tourist trap of a town. They're getting ready for their 4th of July celebration. Everybody's real hype. And then anytime you go to the beach, there's always a couple of people on the beach having fun. You have the skinny dippers in the first part, and then you have all the holiday makers in the second part. Now, in my research, talking New York, there's always a couple of places that a lot of New Yorkers go to for their holidays. And they pop up every now and then in different TV shows. Like Sex and the City had
The Hamptons.
Yeah. They all went to the Hamptons for some reason. They had that in the Nanny Diaries as well. It was like they called it Nanny Hell.
Oh, God.
Because the Hamptons is where all of the rich people go and they bring the nannies along so that they can forget that they have children for a while.
Oh.
So it's just like a week of solid torture. Well, the Hamptons is one. That's coastal. And then there's the Finger Lakes.
There's Long Island as well, isn't
there? There is Long Island. But that's kind of more of a residential place, you know. But there's a place called the Finger Lakes, which is kind of like a forest retreat type of place, almost. Mm-hmm. It's advertised as that from the advertising that I saw. Now, in one of the latest reports, they said that the income over the summer based on people staying in Airbnbs in the Finger Lakes was $7.5
billion.
Oh, wow. 7.5 million. I got ahead of myself there.
I was like, billion? That's a lot.
I mean, this is just people's spare rooms. Can you imagine how much hotels make?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
B&Bs, local businesses. Because as it turns out, these places, during the rest of the year, they don't make very much money. No. The people that actually live there, the people who work as waiters and all, and hotel staff, they can barely afford to live there because the rest of the year, they're just not making any money. Mm. And then when the rich New Yorkers descend on them like a flock of locusts, they make so much money that it's really, really worth it for them to kind of keep their business centralized there. Now, if Amity Island was taking an awful lot of the Finger Lakes' business, it's causing a huge economic downturn. So how plausible then is it that if you are a government official working for the Finger Lakes and you think, I'm going to have to try and steer people away from Amity Island without making it look like I'm doing it, you know, dastardly wise. So you find a local lunatic, some guy that you know has engineering skill and is just crazy enough to do the job you want done for a lowish fee. We're talking $5,000, maybe $10,000.
If even.
Yeah. To make a suit or a submarine, a type of mini submarine that looks like what a person who doesn't know very much about sharks, to make it look like a shark. And then you get that person to get into the water with it and paddle it around and scare people away with the dorsal fin. And, you know, every now and then popping the head out and just going, woo, I'm a shark, go away.
Rawr.
Kind of thing. Rawr, I am a shark. So, yeah, that, I mean, that to me is very plausible. If I gave you $10,000 and told you to make a shark suit and go scare the tourists, would you do it?
Hell yes. Yes, I would.
Would you do it if I offered you $2,000?
I'd do it for free. The thought of just terrorizing the holidaymakers in some form of shark wetsuit would just be... it. That's my ideal summer, really.
Okay. And I mean, based on your skill level, because you are a cosplayer.
I am indeed, yes.
As am I, to a different extent. But I mean, you're also a working artist, so I don't think you'd have any problem making it look semi-realistic.
No, like there's a lot of materials that you could use theoretically to make it and make it light enough that a person could potentially guide it. Like you'd use foam, you'd use PVC. Like I wouldn't imagine there'd be an awful lot of metal in it because you'd want it to be quite buoyant.
Yes, exactly. Well, what we wanted to do is we wanted to kind of rise to the top when it needs to and sink to the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm thinking that a very experienced scuba diver,
yeah,
working quite quickly, might be able to get a decent speed in the frame if he just has to build the frame and maybe the hingy jaws.
There's also... people call them bloopers, with the air quotes, of Jaws, where you look down its mouth and you can see hydraulic tanks. And I'm just like, that is entirely put in intentionally. That wasn't a blooper at all. That was the hint. That was the hint that it's a fake shark.
So you got a quick glimpse behind the curtain.
Behind the Wizard of Oz curtain.
Okay, so yeah, there are obviously some sort of hydraulics involved here to power the thing. And then obviously somebody has an oxygen tank. But I think what happened there is the intention was for this guy to get in the water and scare the holidaymakers and have a couple of instances of reporting sharks.
Yeah.
And they paid a bit of money for this to happen, and that was fine. Except that the guy that they paid lost the run of himself once he was in the water and started killing people.
Because what better way to commit serial murder when they think it's a shark and you're like, no, no, I'll get my bloodlust somehow.
I don't even think it's that. I mean, you know the way when you get into a costume and your character suddenly kind of morphs into, you know, the character that you're being, you briefly inhabit that person. I know it doesn't happen to us that much. But you know, some people only have a very thin grasp of reality.
I know whenever I cosplay Oogie Boogie, it is so easy to get into that character. In particular, the way the costume is made, it's very restrictive around my ankles. So I have to do the Oogie Boogie walk to actually move in it. So it's very easy to slip into that character. A lot more than some of my other cosplays. So.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it now, right, how many people could you name off the top of your head that would be able to make a shark costume?
Oh, dozens with the cosplay circles and seeing some of the ones that they've made. Like you see Warhammer and like Overwatch and all of those League of Legends cosplayers. The craft that can go into them for relatively cheap, it would be very easy to make a shark. Like,
yeah, and I mean, of those people, are there any that you think would be in the shark suit and would just completely lose the run of themselves?
All of them. I go to conventions, all of them, literally all of them.
Yes, they suddenly just morph in, like they start living their shark fantasy. And they become the shark. So they and because they don't know that much about sharks as well, they decide that the shark is a bloodthirsty monster and has to kill people. And this is now the problem for the Finger Lakes official. They go, oh, God, we have just sent this lunatic into the water in his hydraulic shark suit and he is killing tourists and we need to make sure that they don't find out that it's a guy.
We need to hide the evidence.
We need to hide the evidence and try and distance itself from us. So what do? They hire Hooper.
Ooh.
Because Hooper happens to come into the story after I think two people have been killed. And he's like, this is when they've caught the sand tiger shark and they're like, hey, we got the shark. You know, there's no more danger. And he looks at it and he goes, no, sorry, guys, that's a sand tiger shark. And they go, what? Because they've never heard of a sand tiger shark. They're like, you're looking for a bigger shark. So
the biggest shark.
But he was like, you know, I'm going away on this retreat and I'm going to be like in the ocean for 6 months with no human contact for a while. But I just happened to be passing Amity Island. So I decided to pop in and just see if I can help you with your shark problem.
That's vaguely, vaguely convenient.
And you see, here's the thing that like he's either the worst marine biologist in the world to not notice the thing about the teeth
mm-hmm.
and the eye rolling and the attack formation.
The size of it in general.
Or he's in on it. And then, of course, Quint is another problem here because, first of all, he's clearly mad as a box of cats.
Yes.
But he seems to have some decent shark knowledge because he does say the thing about the rolling eye. And this could I think that's possibly why him and Hooper don't get along.
Because he knows.
There's friction. It's like, you know, this guy knows too much. If he gets a really good look at this shark, he's going to know it's not a real shark. So I'm going to have to distract him. So, like, the night before, he gets Quint really drunk.
Distract him, air quotes.
But then the most mysterious thing is that Hooper disappears. He gets into his scuba gear and he dives into the water and you think he's died because he disappears for a while.
Mm.
Then that's when the shark tries to sink the boat and eats Quint.
With his tiny drill.
If it's a human, he could have a drill. That's what I'm saying. Because they did all this tracking thing. Like, they shot him full of harpoons and everything. And then the harpoons went to the island and then they popped back up and everything. I mean, he could have easily just tied one of his ballast weights onto the thing and then snuck under the boat with a drill and...
Like some form of Scooby-Doo villain.
Yes. Here's another thing. This is basically a Scooby-Doo plot. You know, so at the end of it, they would have gone, let's see who the shark was all along. Mr. Hooper, the crazy old man who lives in the Finger Lakes. And you know, I would have gotten away with it if it hadn't been for your meddling kids. But here's the thing. A meddling kid was killed in the first few minutes of the film.
Yes.
It was possibly Daphne. Maybe the Scooby-Doo gang were there already. And Daphne decided to go for a cheeky midnight swim and got eaten by the shark. And the rest of them were too demoralized to sort of solve the mystery.
Now, that is a crossover I would love to see. I'd pay to see that.
Well, you can't disprove it.
Oh, gee, Scoob.
Oh, gee, Scoob. Daphne was dismembered by a shark. Who could have done this?
Oh, my God. We should have fed him a Scooby snack. I'm so sorry for that. I apologize.
This podcast gets very grim sometimes. It does. It really does.
It does.
Okay, so, like, Hooper is there. He's trying not to let on that he's in on it. So he's trying to distract Quint by getting him drunk.
Yeah.
It might have even been Hooper who drilled the holes in the boat that made it sink. Yeah. And then all shark guy had to do was, like, flop around on it a little bit to make it go faster and then eat Quint. And you do notice as well, like, Quint is very distracted at that moment. So he doesn't point out, hey, that shark is biting into me and its eyes is not rolling back. It is not a real shark.
Hey, that shark smells a bit like PVC foam.
And that's hydraulics.
And hydraulics. That's not a sharky smell.
Yeah, I mean, he got eaten, but they only got his legs in and then they dragged him under the water. So, like, you can't even say that the shark really ate him. It just bit him.
And you don't even see it being eaten properly as well. It's just enough to grab him and drag him down. Like, he didn't tom nom nom him like.
Yeah, it didn't do what a shark usually does, which
use
is
use its jaw.
No, it just kind of flopped its upper part of its body very awkwardly onto its bottom part of the body. The jaws never hinged. None of the teeth popped out, you know, and it was very awkward. I have never seen a great white shark, or in fact, any shark of any description, attack a boat like that.
No.
I have seen orca whales do stuff like that to ice floes when they're trying to knock seals into the water.
Mm. Dolphins.
Dolphins too, yeah. Crows, obviously, as we've discussed.
Oh, damn corvids.
I mean, we can't prove that there wasn't some sort of crow conspiracy as well.
I just love the visual image that this shark machine was just piloted by a flock of really angry crows. It's like, you didn't feed me bread, now you must die.
Yeah.
I love that image.
Well, I also think that the intention was never that Brody was going to survive.
No.
You know, he was meant to die with Quint, but Hooper decided at the last minute, well, he does not know anything about sharks, clearly. He's also afraid of the water, even though he's on a boat. And now, after this, he's going to have a complete and utter water phobia. I mean, you know the way when you developed your fish phobia?
Yeah.
And I mean... like,
oh,
it just got worse when you were exposed to the fish. And, I mean, you were never in any life-threatening situation with that.
No.
Whereas Brody was. Actually, do you want to talk about your fish phobia? Because this is an interesting story.
So I'd like to point out that David Attenborough ruined my life. I'd love to meet him, but he also ruined my life. When I was a kid, we were watching like this documentary about the salmon fishing in Canada. And you know how like the salmon go upstream to have all of their babies up at the top of the waterfall and stuff. But what they didn't tell you until that moment was they die immediately after. So this lovely shot of, oh, yes, the fish, they go up the river in Canada to have their wonderful babies. And then they slowly have a panning shot underneath the water where they have thousands of fish corpses, decaying fish corpses all over the screen in some form of a horrible hellscape. And then we were watching it on a VHS tape. Okay. Showing my age there. We were watching it on a VHS tape that decided that at that moment, with the fishy hellscape to start glitching. So it just started to pulsate in that terrible VHS pulsate. So me, small circa child, was like, oh, dear God, I think I have seen the bowels of hell. So now anytime I look at a fish and I see their little jaws and their little scaly things, I just keep getting flashbacks to David Attenborough repeating, the fish die, they die, they die, they die. Flashing images of decaying fish. So even now when I see people eat fish, like if you're sitting down having your nom 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 a sushi, I'm just like, you're eating like Canadian salmon corpse. You need to stop that. I can't deal with it at all.
I think one of the greatest memories that I have of you was that time that we were in a place doing a project where we didn't have any control over the menu that we were given in the evenings. And they put an entire fish in front of you, head still attached.
It was a battered fish and you could see all of its like face bones and oh
yeah. And you did the most athletic thing that I have ever seen you do, where you did a sort of a backwards barrel roll because you could, like, we were on a long bench, there was people to the left of you and people to the right of you, so you had nowhere to go but up, and you rolled backwards over the sofa and out the door.
Yeah, I basically learned parkour because that was a situation where my entire being just went, nope. just no. Yeet.
Yeah, you did nope right out of there. That was great. And in fact, like, that was when we were in Lithuania. And Lithuania did seem to have a thing about assaulting you with fish.
They did. There was many, many instances where we like to call it surprised fishing, where you're just like, oh, that's a nice thing. Why does that lady have a fish in her handbag? And we will never know to this day why that lady had a fish in her handbag, but she did, because Lithuania. Oh, that was wild. That was wild.
That was wild. This is why we like going back there so much.
Oh.
Except for the whole, you know, the fishy terror.
I'd be significantly more chill if it was a shark. Because I know people find sharks really, really terrifying. But I can't stop looking at them and going, aw, he's just shark senpai. He just wants a little nibble. It's fine. It's fine. And then I keep thinking of Sidon from Breath of the Wild. And then it's impossible to find sharks scary then when you're like, hey, Sidon is handsome.
He is. He is a very handsome fish prince.
Handsome fish prince.
Yeah. That conversation took a very weird turn.
It did. I really apologize. I do that.
No, that's okay. It's really fine. I think one of the other really curious things about this is, though, that you have a scuba diving license.
I do. I do, in fact, have a full scuba diving license.
Skydiving.
Skydiving with scuba gear because you're hardcore like that.
Oh my god, wouldn't that be a great way to attack sharks?
An aerial assault.
That's so surprised. No, what's going on?
I have a scuba diving license, ironically, despite the fact that I'm afraid of fish, but I'm not afraid of turtles, and that's why I have them, because turtles are my bros. So
that's fair.
But getting back to
Well, we were talking about Brody's phobia of the ocean full stop, and now he's just seen a guy that he knew get eaten by a shark and he's on a sinking boat. So I think this is the point in time when Hooper said, oh, okay, listen, Brody's not a threat to us anymore. He is never going to go back to the water.
I think they wanted to keep one of them alive so they can tell the story of what happened.
That's possible.
Because, you know, in those mafia movies where they kill everybody, it's like, you survive, you would go and tell their story. I think that's why he was left alive, so he could tell people. It's like, oh no, man, sharks, they bad.
Not only that, but they did blow up the shark suit. It's possible that the lunatic piloting the shark suit escaped.
That would explain why there's so many sharky sequels.
That's true. Actually, on that point, do you want to know something really, really funny?
Yes.
The film Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus.
Oh,
has
yeah.
that scene where the shark jumps out of the ocean to attack a plane. And the way it does it is actually more accurate to shark biology and hunting styles than Jaws is.
That is a piece of information that I didn't know I needed to hear. But now that I do, everything just feels right with the world. I'm so glad that is accurate. It's canon.
Yeah, I can't speak for how... you know, for how accurate Sharknado is, because I haven't actually seen it.
It's incredibly accurate. Like, everybody knows the tornadoes cause Sharknadoes.
I think when I saw the cover, I was just more upset by the fact that they had several different shark species in the tornado. And I was just like, those don't live in the same area.
You're a shark purist.
I am a shark purist. But you know what's really cool is that you can actually watch scuba divers swimming with great whites.
Yeah.
And the great whites do nothing. There's actually dolphin. There's this one girl and she's swimming alongside it. She grabs onto its fin and she has a little cruise with the shark. And the shark is just kind of like, okay, I guess this is happening.
Yeah, they're relatively chill.
Like they're very chill. And there's two dolphins behind them who are considerably less chill if you know about dolphins.
I think it's so unfortunate that Jaws, while it was a very great movie, it did poison people a little bit towards sharks when really they're not the worst threat that you can face when you're out in the ocean. Like, a lot of people are more likely to be killed by jellyfish actually, because they shock you and then you drown, than you are ever to be attacked or killed by sharky boys. And it's unfortunate that people are so afraid of them now. Yeah. And I'm like, no, there's more things to be afraid of.
There's considerably more things to be afraid of. The other thing is that the writer of the book, Peter Benchley, he was actually fairly horrified by the effect that the film had on shark populations.
Yeah.
He always said that the idea to make the shark a villain was Steven Spielberg's idea, because he was so worried about losing money on this thing that he kind of had to make a really big summer blockbuster type movie rather than a nice story about a shark and the beach. But he spent the rest of his life, until he died in 2006, he spent the rest of his life advocating for shark conservation.
That's nice. That's really cool.
Here's a really cool fact, though, as well, is that you can get a tracker on your phone, the shark tracker, where you can look at the destinations and the cruise paths of many different sharks that have been tagged. Mm-hmm. And some of the adventures that these sharks go on are absolutely fascinating. There's one shark that spent quite a lot of time in tropical waters, and then it went to Perth in Australia. Like, it just went into the coast. It saw something there that freaked it out enough that it just went back home and never
back.
Went back to Australia. Something in the Australian waters frightened that poor shark.
I just loved that idea that he was like, oh, let's go on a quick holiday to Perth. Nope. Cthulhu's down there. Nope.
I kind of have this like mental image of him noping out of there the same way you noped out when you got assaulted by the fish.
Just parkouring back into the ocean.
More or less, barrel rolling right back into tropical waters.
Here is an interesting theory. Do you think that shark was secretly just helping Nemo?
What?
In Finding Nemo, it was in Perth or Melbourne, wasn't it? Do you think he was just dropping off like the clownfish to find Nemo?
They did have an altercation with some sharks.
Yeah. That's real now. That's okay. A thing that happened.
There is another shark who apparently went on a day trip to Chile, like into the middle of Chile. Like, so got out of the water.
In the center of Chile.
Yeah, got out, possibly took a bus into the very center of Chile, hung out there, did some sightseeing, went back to the ocean. So it's possible that there are multiple people in shark suits that have just decided to live their lives as sharks now. And every now and then they just get like a craving for like they want to go to the cinema or they want to eat some Haagen-Dazs and they're just kind of, okay, I'm just going to drop the shark identity for a little while, go out, have some fun wherever you're closest to. And then they put the shark suit back on, get back in the ocean.
It's like a shark shape of water.
Oh, that now that's canon as well.
You know, in the end where she's just like, I'm going to go live with my fish boy. And I'm just like, maybe that was people who tried on the shark suit and was like, no, I am shark kin. This is who I truly am. And now they just live in the ocean.
Possibly getting tagged by genuine oceanographers.
So here's the thing. Do you think their whole plan to Scooby-Doo level of bamboozle people away from the island, do you think it actually worked?
Yeah. Because in the sequels, they said that Amity Island's tourism rates had just tanked completely. And I mean, that must have done great things for the Finger Lakes, because you don't get sharks in lakes.
No.
Generally, anyway. I think there's like isolated species that might actually...
You can get lake dolphins, I've heard.
Well, you can get river dolphins.
Yeah.
And then, you know, some that end up like stranded in lakes. But generally speaking, lakes are pretty safe as far as the wildlife goes. I mean, you have to watch out for water snakes.
Yes.
That kind of thing.
And the Loch Ness Monster.
Well, that just in Scotland. This is New York. It's a New York monster. Oh, it's the Jersey Devil.
The Jersey Devil?
Yeah, you have to look out for the Jersey Devil. Oh, hang on. How close is New Jersey to New York?
New Jersey's relatively close to
New York.
Isn't
it in New York? It is so bad at geography.
It is. It is very close. Like Brooklyn is also in New York, isn't it?
I'd like to put this in the podcast as well before I forget that if you think that we have gotten anything wrong or inaccurate, don't be afraid to send us a message on social media.
We really want to hear your theories about it and how you think that they managed to pull this off, or if they are completely wrong, or if we're completely wrong and it's secretly aliens as well, that also might be possible.
Or if you just want to insult us, I mean, we can't say that we're actually going to read those ones, but feel free to, you know, send as many insults as you feel like. It's like, we know nothing about sharks.
Don't tell them to send insults. It's the internet, Sinead.
That's actually a good point. Okay, I retract that statement. Do not send us insults. We will filter them if we get them. We'll have like one hapless person to read the nasty comments, and then we'll just read the positive ones. But no, we would like to hear any input from other people out there who are interested in the podcast and would like to submit a theory. We can flesh it out. We can talk about it. We can't guarantee that we will believe anything that we're saying, because the whole basis of this podcast is that we actually don't believe any of this. We just like to think about it.
I don't know, fam. I don't know. There's some theories that I'm 100% convinced that Mary Poppins is a Pennywise monster, and you cannot convince me otherwise.
Well, I mean, that's an episode for that's a future episode. Other future episodes that we have in the pipeline are we want to do a toddler TV special where we're going to talk about TV shows specifically aimed at toddlers, because I have watched an awful lot of those in the course of my years of having to look after small children. And the world of toddler TV is oddly terrifying.
It's wild.
It is very wild.
It's so wilder than you ever thought kids TV could be. That it's a gold mine of interesting theories, I think. So,
yeah. Okay, well, that kind of wraps up that episode, really. Do you have any other talking points that you would like to talk about?
No, be nicer to sharks. They're really... chill dudes.
Yeah, absolutely. Don't get into the ocean and start trying to punch sharks just to get a shark tooth necklace. You can find them anywhere. They're in decent supply, unless you're fighting a fake shark.
I think we can both agree what our takeaway from this is, that the real villain here is David Attenborough. Anyway, this has been Crackpot Theories. I am Circa.
I'm Sinead.
And the truth is out there, and it is weirder than you think. Thank you very much for listening.
And good night.